Hello and welcome to today's video. As you will already know by now, the BBC is about to screen yet another documentary attempting to expose Patriotic Alternative and put pressure on anti-immigrant protesters. As such, last week, the BBC invited me to their studios in Manchester for an interview. I of course agreed, and I recorded the whole thing. I not only answered the questions put to me, but also let the interviewer know exactly what I thought of the BBC and the documentary itself, which isn't a balanced piece, but a blatant attempt to smear those featured. However, this isn't a typical BBC documentary that simply exists to scare the public into keeping their mouths shut on important issues such as mass immigration, multiculturalism, and the grooming gangs. In letters received by myself and Patriotic Alternative, the BBC make it clear that our organisation operates lawfully within the boundaries of current legislation. However, in an insidious twist, the BBC is using this documentary to attempt to pressure the government into changing the law and effectively making it illegal to openly advocate for the rights and well-being of white Britons. But what's even worse is the BBC is also pushing for new laws that would open the door to members of the public being prosecuted for what they say in private conversations. This would mean that people could be arrested for espousing opinions in their own homes. The BBC is clearly using its power and taxpayers' money to push a political agenda which aims to silence those who are opposed to further immigration and who speak out against anti-white criminality. I hope you enjoy the recording, which is presented in its entirety, and that if you do watch the forthcoming BBC documentary, you will be able to see how the corporation misrepresents individuals and groups through selective editing and cherry-picking information that supports their warped narrative. Anyway, you can now listen to the full interview and make up your own mind.
Right, are we ready?
Okay.
First of all, are you happy that you've agreed to this interview,
and
it's part of a programme that we're
doing. You're not filming anymore. No.
And we're going to be part of a BBC Wales programme that goes out on the 21st. And a subsequent podcast.
Yes.
Great.
A series of podcasts, isn't it?
Yes.
We were told it was like a, there's going to be a series of podcasts, it's going to feature as part of that, and the main programme is on the 21st of this month on BBC Wales.
And on iPlayer.
I mean, that's I expect it to be online because people always clip these things. It'll be, you know, probably re-uploaded to numerous sites after that.
Great. You ready, John?
Yeah.
Paul, you happy? Look, first things first, under the previous government, your organisation was accused of promoting what they described as neo-Nazi ideologies, and they said they would be assessing Patriotic Alternative against what they called a new definition of extremism. Is PA an extreme far-right group?
Well, this underlies the government's attack on freedom of speech, because what the government is saying is, this group here acts in a lawful manner, they're not breaking the law, they're not doing anything illegal, so we want to pass new laws to stop them doing what they're currently doing.
Are you happy that that description that you're promoting neo-Nazi ideology?
I think that description is a description the government has used specifically as a way to characterise us in a manner to allow them to pass legislation to potentially outlaw a number of groups and stop people from expressing legitimate concerns about mass immigration, multiculturalism, and issues such as the grooming gangs, because today anyone that talks about those issues is characterised as far right. If you go to our website,
which are you far right?
Far right is just a term that people
but
throw
are
around.
You far right? Are you a neo-Nazi organisation?
I'm an ethno-nationalist. I'm somebody who believes that this country should primarily be run for the benefit of the indigenous people of these islands. That is somebody who would characterise themselves as an ethno-nationalist.
So how would you describe PA, your organisation?
We're an ethno-nationalist organisation. We're an organisation that campaigns for the rights of the indigenous people of these islands. We want an end to mass immigration, and we want to ensure that the indigenous people of the British Isles never become second-class citizens in their ancestral homeland.
But given your description of what you want and what you describe your organisation, we've gathered that evidence over a number of months that suggests a number of your members and supporters have expressed what might be described as extreme racist and violent views about migrants, about immigrants. How does that reconcile with what you describe your organisation as?
Well, firstly, I want to make the point that we've actually asked the BBC for evidence of
this. But we've detailed those allegations in a letter to you.
There's also... you want a comprehensive answer to this, I'm sure. We've asked you for evidence of this, which hasn't been forthcoming, and we've asked for context also. Because when people say things, which I'm sure you're going to read things that people have said to me, and you're going to ask for an answer, I stand by people's right to freedom of speech and freedom of association. The comments that were made are protected under law, because they were comments made at private meetings in private conversation. Now, the fact is, you sent someone to our group who infiltrated our group, who secretly recorded people against their knowledge, without their consent, and we'd actually been very nice to this guy. This guy came to us, he said he hadn't got a job, he was sleeping on his friend's couch. We got him a job, we actually got him employment. I'm sure that won't feature in the documentary, because that would make it a balanced documentary, which you don't want to produce.
You'll see the documentary when it goes out.
Oh no, of course.
But the one comments I'm about to read to you were comments made by your supporters, made by your members, in public places.
They were made at our camp, which is a private gathering, and they were made in private conversations, and they were made at our conference, which is a private, invite-only event, and they were made in private conversation. They were not made in public places, and they were not made as any form of campaign or as when people attend our events, we have a code of conduct, and if people have breached that code of conduct, then we will deal with that in due course. But we can't deal with that unless we've seen the evidence and whether the comments made are in some form of context.
Well, let me give you some of the evidence, and I'll ask you what you...
Well, no, you're reading what you claim has been said, but I haven't seen the context.
Well, you've seen the comments and the evidence, because we've given it in a detailed...
You haven't sent me any evidence. Like, if I stood up in court and said, you know, I've got all the evidence that this guy did whatever, the court would ask to see the evidence, and essentially you're putting me on trial.
We wouldn't
put out
evidence unless we were legally allowed to do so. At your annual conference, which you mentioned, one of your members, a man called Tom Webster, describes himself as a totalitarian who wants a whites-only world. He asked other members to watch videos of Indians being killed. He's a civil servant who has admitted deliberately giving wrong information at work to people just because they're not white. He's made racist comments at the summer camp you talked about. He said he would have crushed the skulls of some hikers on a hike because they were Asian. Is this the kind of person you want in your group?
No, again, what he said, the comments you're alleging that he made
those comments,
were made at a private gathering to people in private conversation. Now, if those comments, when placed in context, are, as you say, just unwarranted, then he would have broke our code of conduct. We have a code of conduct that specifically says that if you come to this event, you agree beforehand.
And so those comments break your code of conduct?
If those comments are as you have said, then they may well break our code of conduct.
So he'd be kicked out of your group.
At which point, he will be getting a letter from us, and we will conduct our own inquest into this, and if he has indeed broke the code of conduct, then he will be receiving a letter from us, and there'll be a range of different actions open to us. We ask everyone, and you're aware of this because your guy infiltrated us, he will have been given at one time or another a copy of our code of conduct, which you could have, you could ask for it and I would send it to you, and he will have agreed that if he attends one of our private gatherings, he must abide by that. Now, if people have broken that, then they have come to our event with bad intent and aren't following our rules.
But this just is one person. There's another of your members, pardon me, a former high school teacher. You know, Tom Webster is a civil servant. Another member is a former high school teacher, Patrick Lawler. He said during the same summer hike that PA are mirroring what the Nazis did before coming to power. And at conference, he said that he believes a race war is inevitable, and that if it happened, the only way to get rid of migrants who refuse to leave the country would be to kill them. What do you make of those comments from a former high school teacher, a member of your organisation, and has what many people would say are clearly extreme views.
What I'd say is, people like Patrick have concerns that this country...
Concerns about... these are more concerns.
Yeah, concerns. We've just been talking on a nationwide basis over the last couple of weeks about the fact hundreds of thousands of white girls were systematically groomed, sexually assaulted, raped, trafficked, and in some cases murdered by men who have come here as migrants. There is simmering tensions all over this country because of things like that. And there are concerns by normal people that this will result in violence. He's clearly commenting on that. And he's clearly talking about the fact that racial tension in this country has risen because of policies enacted by subsequent governments that have pushed mass immigration against the wishes of normal people.
So is the way to deal with that racial tension to get rid of migrants, and if they refuse to leave, they should be killed?
I don't think anyone should be killed, but I do
Patrick
think...
Patrick,
I don't. Well, you've asked me what I think, and I don't think anyone should be killed simply for being here. However, I do believe that many people who are here, we would be better off, as in the indigenous people of these islands, would be better off if those people weren't here. And that includes large numbers of people in what are known as settled communities who have treated the people of this country appallingly, and there's been a huge cover-up about it. The Labour government have been involved in that cover-up, the BBC have been involved in that cover-up, and people want some form of justice. Now, he seems to be advocating
they be killed, seeking justice.
If people who have come to this country sexually assault, rape, or groom white British girls, or any other girls for that matter, then yes, they should be forced to leave the country. We don't want them here. They're not coming here to be part of our society and play a productive role. They're here and they're carrying out serious criminal acts.
But this is a common tactic, isn't it? If people have come to this country...
But they have. That's what's happening.
Some people have been born here. Let me take the Southport killings. The killings of those three girls in Southport. You quite often... made the point that this was an immigrant who may have done
this. He's of immigrant descent.
He's a person born in this country, born in Cardiff.
Is he of African descent?
Does it matter?
He was born in this country.
Somebody's born in this country. But isn't this a common tactic of yours to suggest that anybody who is of a different skin colour to you and me is not a native of this country and should therefore be expelled?
It's a fact. If I was born in Nigeria, no one would call me a native or indigenous Nigerian.
If you're born in this country, then?
If you're born in this country, you can be a British citizen, of course, but it doesn't make you indigenous any more than many people who served in the British Empire. Their children were born in India, but no one looks and says, oh, well, he's a native Indian.
So do you think that people born in this country of another country's descent, even though they're born in this country, they should be expelled?
If they commit serious crimes, then yes, they should. They are not indigenous. They're here as British citizens. They're passport holders. So in that sense, you can argue, yes, they are British and they have, you know, rights in this country. But if they then go on to commit heinous acts, like stabbing three little girls at a dance class, do you want him in this country? Do you, do the BBC, the people in this room, want a man who thinks stabbing three little girls is a good thing in this country? The answer should be no, but you'll never say that in answer to that question.
We've got evidence that it's not just your members, but some of your supporters. At your annual conference, you had, as one of the keynote speakers, a man called Blair Cottrell, an Australian far-right activist. He made incredibly racist and violent comments during conversations, open conversations with other members. He likened Africans to dogs. He said slaves had been happy to work for white people. He also suggested that black criminals should be skinned and their bodies hung up at traffic lights to deter others.
What criminal was he referring to? Because I've spoken to him.
He said he was talking about people in his own country. But this
is he was talking about a man who, specifically a man who had shot an elderly grandma in front of her grandchild in order to steal her car. Now, that is not something that I would call for, but I'm sure there are millions of people all over this country that if you said, what should happen to the leaders of these grooming gangs? They would say, string them up. They'd say, string them up, we've had enough. They've committed serious crimes, string them up or get them out of the country.
You don't think that language is insightful in any way?
I think he spoke in a very, very strong way, but he spoke in private conversation at a private meeting. That is protected speech. And
he was speaking to members of your organization.
He was speaking in private conversation at a private meeting. People have a right to express themselves as they see fit in private conversation. Now, if somebody advocates for a group in public on behalf of that group, that's a different thing. You know that, I know that, and it's different in the way the law deals with that. Is that what I would have said? No.
But you're the leader of an organisation. You're responsible, if you like, for your members, Patrick and Tom, and what they say, or you have to defend what they say. And if you don't defend it, you have to take action against them. Blair Cottrell was a guest at one of your events. Will you be continuing links with him, given his extreme views?
As I said, I'm not going to throw my friend under the bus, of course. Of course I'm going to stay in touch with him, yeah.
With somebody who makes those kind of comments.
I told you, he spoke in a very, very strong manner because he's obviously very angry about the things he's obviously very, very angry about the things that are taking place. The fact is, and I've said this earlier in this interview, there are simmering tensions here in the UK and all over the Western world. But those tensions and the anger you're reporting on is a direct result of anti-democratic practices and the fact successive governments keep bringing in record numbers of migrants despite people saying they've had enough and despite the consequences of those policies nearly always impacting the indigenous people of Western countries in a negative manner.
Another person who's a member of your group, Aaron Watkins in South Wales, described migrants as subhuman invaders who should be, again, violently removed. He said they should be rounded up, put in camps, and shot if they refuse to leave. This is, again, continuing on a theme.
And as I've said, if he's saying that at our events, he's breaking our code of conduct.
Another one has broken your code of conduct.
I've just said that.
That's at least three people.
But wait a second. Your guy was undercover with us for about a year. He spoke to dozens of people, attended events where there was hundreds of people there, and you've got a selection of cherry-picked comments that took place over a day that lasted about 12 hours.
These comments aren't typical of your members.
Wait, if you were producing a documentary that was typical of what we do and the kind of people involved, you would be reporting on the fact that the man that you sent to infiltrate us came to us with a sob story and we got him a job. If we were awful people who were trying to do all these nefarious things, would we spend our time helping people who come to us, telling us they're down and out, getting them jobs, supporting them, looking after them? Is he going to report on all the things that we did that weren't in some way salacious? No, of course not, because you're not producing a balanced documentary.
Are these views of several members of your organisation and supporters typical of the extremist language that I'm highlighting to you now?
No, because if they were typical of the extremist language, as you call it, what you would have is a lot more of these comments, because he was undercover for what, a year? And that's the sole focus of this documentary is a few cherry-picked comments, which I've already said to you, in some cases will probably breach our code of conduct, and in other cases are the direct result of anger built up because of government policy.
Aaron Watkins is, again, somebody who has, in his workplace, admitted destroying incriminating evidence, a telephone, during a police investigation. Are you happy to have somebody who deliberately does that in your organisation?
What he does at work is not my direct concern. I'm not his employer. If he's done something at work which is either incorrect, wrong, or breaking the law, that's for them to deal with. Now, if he said things at our events which breach our code of conduct, that is my concern. And I'm happy to say that. It's not my concern what he does at work every
day. So will you, at the end of this interview, will you, when you've seen our programme, will you go and investigate all of these individuals who've...
I've already said that.
You will. And
I've said that.
And if they breach your code of conduct, these six or seven people, they will be expelled from your organisation.
I didn't say expelled. They will get letters. There will be a full investigation. They'll get letters. They'll obviously be able to give their side of the story as well as to why they said these things, because that's how things work in a democratic, free and lawful society. And we will hear what they have to say. And if they have said things that breach our code of conduct, then we will deal with them appropriately.
But are you happy to have members in your organisation who say this kind of thing,
I've just said, if the comments they make in context and with us viewing the evidence are as you are saying, that will breach our code of conduct, at which point there will be an investigation into what they've said, which is obvious to anybody listening to this, that we have policies that don't allow that kind of language to be used at our event.
Another member, Alex, another Welsh member, used racial slurs regularly, repeatedly, pardon me, used the N-word and the P-word. He describes routinely hating black and Asian people. Again, is that what you try and encourage your members to hate people who aren't white?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because you said, is that what we try to do? Now, if you had evidence that we tried to do that...
I'm asking you,
We put forward to the public and to people who support us the truth. We speak about issues that the government want to cover up. We speak about issues that the BBC and the media will not speak to the public honestly about, and people come to hear what we have to say because we will honestly address issues like mass immigration, multiculturalism, we'll address issues like the grooming scandal, and we'll also talk about the big issue of the day, which is, of course, that white British people are being reduced to a minority in their ancestral homeland.
So when somebody like Aaron in the workplace repeatedly uses the N-word as though it was rolling off his tongue, is that the kind of language you're happy to see your members using?
So you're asking me the same question like four or five times, maybe more. I've already said we have a code of conduct. You will have seen that code of conduct. Your undercover reporter will have got it because he will have seen it every time he came to one of our events where you have to consent to agree with it. And in that code of conduct, one of the things that is explicitly prohibited is the use of racial slurs. You know that, I know that, but you're asking me this question repeatedly because you want to ignore the code of conduct, you want to ignore our practice because it doesn't fit your narrative.
The reason I'm asking it repeatedly is because we found numerous of your members and their supporters who are repeatedly doing this. Another of your members, Joe Badminton, repeatedly used the N-word in a pub, a public place, where followers were gathering ahead of the annual conference. He was describing having N-word fatigue because all of the black people at his college were celebrating Black History Month. He said it in a pub where there were plenty of families nearby. Is that, again, acceptable for a member of your organisation?
Well, as I said, I'm sure there's plenty of people in this country who have got complete fatigue when it comes to issues like Black Lives Matter and Black History Month. People are sick of it. He's obviously a frustrated young man. He shouldn't have used intemperate or impolite language. I agree with you on that. However, he's clearly frustrated, as many people are in this country, with certain issues being forced down people's throats. Now, he was sat in private conversation at a pub. What now? Are we saying that anyone who sits in a private conversation at a pub that doesn't say something the BBC likes needs to be exposed on national TV and be hounded?
You don't think there's a pattern of behaviour here amongst your men?
I think, and I've already said this, you have cherry-picked a couple of conversations from what is likely hundreds and hundreds of hours of recording, which at events where hundreds of people are present, and you've presented those, in some cases to us without context, and also without a balanced report that shows the other side of the things we do.
Talking about other things, a banner drop, that's something that your organisation is often involved in. There was one in South Wales attended by members of PA and their supporters. One of those, Roger Phillips, said...
Roger Phillips, by the way, has never been a member of PA.
I didn't say he was a member, he's a supporter. He was at an event organised by members of PA, and the key thing is, he said he was planning to buy a pump-action shotgun to defend himself. He described what he would do to that shotgun, saw off the shotgun, modified the ammunition to defend himself against migrants. How worried are you about that language? And what have you?
Well, Roger Phillips has never been a member of Patriotic Alternative, ever. Roger Phillips, to my knowledge, was involved in the anti-migrant protests outside the Stradey Park Hotel. They were things which PA members attended, but they were not.
He was in a banner drop organised by PA in South Wales when he said these comments.
If he said those comments, he isn't a member of ours. And if somebody was coming to our events and talking like that, you know it would breach our code of conduct.
You keep on referring to the code of conduct, but here you have members and non-members, but supporters expressing their most extreme views and saying, in this case, that he would buy a shotgun, saw the shotgun off, modify the ammunition because
to defend himself
against migrants.
To defend himself. Did he say to defend himself?
Yes, but
so he's not talking about going down and hunt. He's obviously a man.
All of those actions, buying off a shotgun, sawing off a shotgun is illegal.
So have you informed the police about this?
It's not our job to go to the police. Our job is to expose what happens.
Well, the fact
people will look at this documentary and make their own minds up. He is not legally allowed to saw off a shotgun or modify ammunition, is he?
The fact is, if he's doing that, and if he has done that, and he's broken the law, that's a matter for the police. He isn't a member of ours, and the fact of the matter is, with somebody like that, he's obviously, yet again, he's somebody who has deeply held concerns about the future of this country. He's obviously worried about...
Worried enough to buy a shotgun and saw it off?
Well, when you live in a country where hundreds of thousands of white girls have been systematically groomed, sexually assaulted, raped and abused, and anti-white racial attacks regularly occur but are covered up by organisations like the BBC, are people increasingly going to want to defend themselves, their loved ones and their families against activities that may harm them carried out by migrants? People all over the country have been shocked by the migrant crime wave that threatens the safety of everyone that lives here. And there is a palpable sense of frustration and fear from normal people about these things. Obviously, what he has said isn't right, but they are the kind of concerns that more and more people have that the BBC, the government, and other media outlets will never address and will never talk about honestly.
You keep on referring to, in each of these cases, that you would refer to your code of conduct,
yes,
as people might be told about. The legal expert we've spoken to says that, in their view, the comments by these people, the ones I've just read out to you, should be investigated by police because they may amount to incitement. Let me finish, because they may amount to the incitement of racial hatred. What do you got to say to that?
Well, firstly, I'll say is your legal expert a qualified barrister, solicitor, or King's Counsel?
Our legal expert is that, yes.
Yeah, he's a qualified practicing legal professional. He's
absolutely
not just somebody.
No,
because when you write letters to groups like Patriotic Alternative, you always say you have a legal expert or you've spoken to an expert.
But
you never name the expert or their position,
The question I ask you is, the legal expert, who is an expert in this field, says again that those comments I've just read out to you,
those comments, I can answer that, those comments, if they were said at, say, a public rally or a gathering by a speaker who was speaking to a crowd, then they may well be illegal. However, comments said in private conversation at private gatherings are different. That is something that's been tested under the law. Your legal expert should know that. Now, if somebody admits to a crime in private conversation, that can still be investigated by the police. You know that, I know that. But if somebody says privately to their friend in conversation that they feel a certain way about something or use a certain word, that is not illegal.
As you say, people are allowed to hold views that maybe other people would find distasteful.
Yeah.
When comments like these are made in public or in the workplace, then according to our legal advice, that could amount to incitement of racial hatred.
These comments were made in private conversation between people at private events that they were invited to on a private basis. These were not big public events. These were not people who were selected to speak at a gathering and then espouse those views to the gathering as a whole, what you're doing is clutching at straws and effectively trying to campaign to ensure that there is a change in the law. That's what you're about, trying to force a change in the law where people's private conversations will then be held up to scrutiny and people are looking over their shoulder, worrying what they're saying. This is a step towards some kind of police state where people are scared to even speak their mind in their own home or when talking to a friend at the pub.
You talk about your responsibility as leaders to let people know about the code of conduct. One of your senior figures is your regional organiser for Wales, Joe Marsh.
Yes.
He's been introducing some of these people to new members of the group. Do you think he should take responsibility for exposing people to these kind of people with what many people might regard as racist and violent views?
So now we've jumped from... We've jumped from person A said something privately, so that should be against the law, to now person B introduced person A to somebody who then said something
but
that you don't
leaders,
like.
You
so person B is now also culpable. What you're doing is basically saying that anybody who is involved in an anti-immigration group that says something you don't like or introduces somebody to somebody who says something you don't like, it's all terrible, and those people should essentially go to jail for having the wrong opinions or privately discussing their views with others. That is tyranny. So you're campaigning for tyranny.
I'm not campaigning for anything. I'm saying, should a position in a senior position in your group, like Joe Marsh, be introducing people to new members who have clearly views which many people would regard as racist and as extreme?
If people want to express themselves privately, that is their right. Joe Marsh is a fantastic guy. He's been a lifelong campaigner to prevent mass immigration. And if you think I'm going to come here and throw one of my friends under the bus, you're very much mistaken.
Do you deliberately targeted people who might be regarded as vulnerable or neurodiverse? We've spoken to a former member of right-wing organisations who says that's exactly what PA does. You pick on people who are described as, let me use a line here called, known as spur granglers. I think that's a term for Asperger's. People who may be neurodiverse, may have social problems, and you deliberately target them because you put a arm around them and make them feel part of an organisation.
This is the most absurd allegation that I think you've come up with. It's the most ridiculous, baseless nonsense. Again, another expert has given you some testimony. You've had a guy who's been undercover with us for about a year. You'll know that we do online shows, we post things on social media, we go out leafleting, we do community outreach events, we do street stalls, banner drops, things like that. Has your undercover reporter ever been asked to go and reach out to those kind of people? I can answer that question for you because it's a no. We have never gone looking for people like that. Are you suggesting that we go out and leaflet special needs schools or something like that?
I didn't say that at all.
No, but that's what it sounds like. That's
what I said was that we've spoken
to people,
including members of former members of far right organisations, who say
unnamed, of course.
Exactly what PA does, and groups like yours, you deliberately target.
Well, then please give us the evidence, because saying that you've spoken to someone who is anonymous and will remain anonymous, that makes some incredibly ridiculous allegation and does so without any evidence, because there is no evidence, because we don't do it, yet I'm having to sit here and answer such nonsense, but I don't even know who my accuser is, and I haven't even been presented with any evidence to suggest what this mystery accuser says is true.
You talk about things you do. Another yes. thing you do is you raise money for people convicted of racial offences. PA members like Sam Melia,
yes.
James Allchurch, known as Sven Longshanks, James Costello. You call them political prisoners.
They're
not political prisoners.
Yes, they are.
Well, they've been accused and found guilty of serious racial offences.
No. Just because a corrupt anti-white government makes something illegal doesn't make it just to lock somebody up on that basis.
They've been convicted of racial offences.
They've been convicted of thought crimes and speech crimes. You know it, I know it, we raise money for them, we're proud of it.
The fact they've been tried and convicted of inciting and stirring up racial hatred.
People who are convicted of speech crimes...
They're not convicted
of political... Yes, they said things that the government and the BBC doesn't like and got sent to jail for it. That's a speech crime.
It was specific crimes of inciting and stirring up racial hatred.
I was in the Sam Melia trial. The police admitted that everything he published was within the law and was lawful. But they put forward the case that they felt when he produced that lawful material, he was intending to use lawful material to incite racial hatred. Look into the case, that's the truth of the matter. That is the definition of a thought crime. He was sent to jail for what the Crown alleged he was thinking when he produced lawful stickers.
So are you as a political group happy to have members who, in your ranks, who've been convicted of racial offences?
I am absolutely happy.
But that doesn't that go against what you just said previously about your code of conduct? You say have a code of conduct which you apply to people who say such things.
Are you happy to live in a country where people are sent to jail for producing lawful stickers? You obviously are. I'm not. The man is not a criminal. He is someone who was persecuted by the anti-white police state that is bringing in ever more speech and thought crimes to stop Indigenous Britons speaking out against anti-white policy and mass immigration.
Let me put that point to you. You talk about your code of conduct. You say you'll apply it in these cases. But then, by the same token, you're happy to have people in your group who've been convicted of these crimes. The same thing doesn't add up. If your code of conduct doesn't add up to much, if people who've been convicted of racial crimes are allowed to stay in your organisation.
These people were convicted.
It is
speech crimes and thoughts. Sam Melia, the stickers Sam Melia produced, the Crown stated in the trial that the stickers were lawful and no sticker breached current laws. The Crown made the case that it was his thoughts at the time of producing the stickers which were illegal, and that he intended lawful stickers to stir up racial hatred. So that is the definition of a thought crime. You're the one sat here thinking that thought crimes are something that we should have in the UK.
Sam Melia and the others were convicted.
This is the kind of thing you'd expect to encounter in China.
Sam Melia and the others have been convicted of racial offences, of stirring up racial hatred. Again, final question on this one. You're happy to have them as members of your
organisation? I am happy to have people in our organisation who have been persecuted by the anti-white police state for holding the wrong opinions and speaking their mind.
Talking about raising money, you've been raising money for people convicted for their parts in the civil rights, people who pleaded guilty and have been sent to jail.
Yeah,
are you good?
I'm proud of that, of course. Of course I am. We have raised money for three types of people. The first is people who have said things on social media, speech crimes. Secondly, for people who attended anti-immigration protests and have been arrested and coerced into pleading guilty for essentially simply being present while this order took place. And thirdly, we have raised money and distributed money to people who committed minor offences but were given incredibly harsh jail sentences. A good example of this, a young lad, he kicked a police van and he got nearly 2 years in jail for kicking a police van. During the Black Lives Matter riots, young black lad climbs up the cenotaph in London, attempts to set fire to the Union Jack on the cenotaph, suspended sentence. Why are black rioters given suspended sentences, or why are BLM rioters, like in Bristol, the ones who pulled down a statue and threw it in a river, why do they walk free from court? Yet people who attend an anti-immigration protest simply film what's going on and they get coerced into pleading guilty and sent down for sentences of 18 months or more. Because Keir Starmer is presiding over a two-tier justice system, something that you and the BBC support, which specifically targets Indigenous people who speak out against mass immigration and multiculturalism.
Well, first of all, the justice system is independent of government. The justice system well, it is.
Because when a Prime Minister goes on television and states that he's going to convene 24-hour courts, release serious criminals from jail to make way for people who committed speech crimes or attended anti-immigration demonstrations, he did both of those things, and then assures the public or his supporters that he is going to make sure that those involved in any disorder, no matter how tangentially, will receive the harshest sentences possible. He said all of those things. That is not independent justice, because a Prime Minister couldn't go on TV and interfere so blatantly in the justice system if it was genuinely independent.
You talk about reaction to certain events. Is it a tactic of yours to latch on to local causes, like the hotel in Llanelli, or what happened in Southport in the summer, to latch on to local causes, genuine local concerns, and to stir up racial hatred?
There are concerns, and we have people in the area who have those concerns, and they're concerns that I've been speaking about for the last 24, 25 years. I've campaigned relentlessly for 2.5 decades now to prevent the continuation of mass immigration.
But you hijack local concerns.
Like it's not hijacking local concerns. It is assisting local people who we have members in the area. It's assisting local people with their campaigns. And that is something that every political group does. When the Labour Party goes and gets involved in a campaign, are they interfering with local people? Of course they're not, because you like them. It's interfering with a local campaign if we do it, because we're living in a system.
But you don't choose campaign like Llanelli, like Southport, to stir up what are genuine local concerns, local issues, to blame people you see as migrants, incomers, and use that to stir up racial hate.
But you know what you're saying is false. You're lying. Because you have had a guy, as I've repeated earlier, who's been undercover in our organisation. You know that we do things like soup kitchens, we do things like help the homeless, we do things like litter picks, we have fitness events, we help young people with their CVs. We helped your undercover reporter get a job when he pleaded poverty. There's so many things that we do, but you, your organisation, and the documentary that you're part of is cherry-picking things to paint us in a certain light for political purposes.
So you're a benevolent political organisation, you'd say?
Yes, that's a good way of summing us up.
You're not a group that is espousing horrible racist language and encouraging...
Right. We're people who tell the truth. We're people that advocate for the rights of Indigenous Britons, and we are people that campaign against what is going on now in this country. And what is going on is Indigenous people are being reduced to a minority, and a hated minority at that, where they are worse off than second-class citizens, to the degree that if you're a white British dad and your daughter is being raped by a gang of Pakistani Muslims, and you go to free her, it's you who's going to get arrested. And the BBC shamefully colluded in the cover-up of that scandal.
Well, I'm not a BBC spokesman. I'm not here to comment on the BBC.
Oh, that's weird, isn't it? Because all the people who attended my meetings, whether members or not, are apparently Patriotic Alternative spokesmen.
Let's turn... You say you don't inflame local tensions and... tense local situations. You made comments in the wake of the Southport killings in one of your streams, and I quote, "These people shouldn't be in our country. They're a threat to all of us. All of these black people come from very low IQ countries, and they have low impulse control." Now, a lawyer, again, we've spoken to, the same lawyer, says in that venue, that's you inciting racial hatred. What's your response to that? That's you in the response to a very tense situation. Are you guilty, or are you responsible for inciting racial hatred there?
That's a call for sensible immigration control. The fact of the matter is, we have a right
all
to...
All of these black people have come from low IQ countries.
Have you seen the average IQ of sub-Saharan African countries? Now, that's an average. It doesn't mean everyone there's low IQ. But when you have countries that have a substantially different IQ to our country, and also have very different cultures, very different ways of life, you would think a conscientious government would be screening the people coming from those countries to ensure that they are compatible with our way of life, and that they have an appropriate level of understanding of our society so they can fit in. But they don't. It's like, bring everyone here, regardless of who they are, regardless of what they've done, give them a free pass, and then when something goes wrong, blame Mark Collett and Patriotic Alternative, because it's the far right.
But
it's just
nonsense.
Isn't
this a deliberate obfuscation of the facts? Because again, as you continue to maintain, the man accused, and this is important because there's a legal process which we've all got to adhere to here, but the man accused of the Southport killings was born in Wales.
He's got a British passport, but he's clearly of African descent. Is he of African descent?
We're all of some
descent. Is he of African descent? Yes, he is. Is he of African descent? Yes. And we've had a problem in this country.
But you continue to him as a migrant.
We've had a problem in this country, and we saw this with things like the 7/7 bombing, with the Manchester Arena bombing, which didn't happen far from where we are today, where second generation and third generation migrants have not integrated as the government claimed they would, but instead have done the opposite and have done horrific things, committed horrific crimes against the indigenous people of these islands. And again, that's fine, because the BBC says it's fine, apparently. I don't think it's fine. I think there is a problem both with mass immigration, with multiculturalism, and with the fact that migrant communities who have come here have not integrated. And not only have they not integrated, but in many cases, they are specifically targeting the indigenous people of these islands, committing these horrific crimes, and the government's response is simply to shout far right about anyone that voices concerns over this issue.
Isn't that view, isn't that opinion of yours being used in these very sensitive situations to incite racial hatred? I'll give you an example. Joe Marsh told his online followers in the wake of Southport to protest outside migrant hotels instead of mosques. The following day, two hotels, one in Tamworth, one in Rotherham, were set alight. Are you concerned, are you not concerned, that comments like that fuel violence?
I think people have the right to protest. And I think that some of those... I didn't say that, did I? I said people have the right to protest. And they do. Some people who are part of those protests acted in an unlawful manner. But protest... And this is amazing, isn't it? Because when George Floyd was killed in America, and Black Lives Matter rioters ran through London, destroyed statues, attacked policemen, burnt flags at the cenotaph, the BBC wasn't saying, whoa, we need to stop people talking about George Floyd, because if we do, we might have more riots. You guys were amplifying the message. But if white people get angry about white girls getting stabbed, it's not like Black Lives Matter, is it? It's they need to shut up because they're inciting this. Was the BBC, were the politicians who supported Black Lives Matter inciting the riots when they rioted? Of course not, because you guys supported it.
So you don't think that Joe Marsh's language...
No, this is double standards.
So Joe Marsh is saying, telling online followers to protest outside migrant hotels...
He called for legal protest. Now, when people call, when people who saw the death of George Floyd called for protests in places like London and Bristol, and they turned violent, and there was mass disorder, there was rioting, were the people who called for those protests culpable for what went on?
Protesting is a legal right. Nobody's denying
exactly. That. So Joe Marsh exercised his legal right by your own logic.
Again, a legal expert we've spoken to says, in their opinion, Mr. Marsh may have... Mr. Marsh's comments may have fueled violence, and that may amount to incitement. You don't recognise that.
He called for protests. Now, what I'm saying is, if Joe Marsh calling for a protest is against the law, then everybody who Lives Matter protest that ended in violence should be charged, and they should feel the heat from that same law. You can't have a two-tier system where people say, go out and protest for Black Lives Matter, and a city gets burned down, and everyone goes, oh, well, that was unfortunate. But then somebody, like Joe Marsh, says, let's go and protest against what's just happened, which is legal, and then something happens, and then Joe gets the blame. That's a two-tier system.
Is there no responsibility here when you as leaders, you and Joe Marsh, might tell your supporters, advisors.
Wait.
Let me finish. Suggest that your supporters do certain things, and then there are consequences. Do you, as leaders, I'm asking you a question here. Do you, as leaders, share any responsibility for what happens?
If we call for legal activity, and that legal activity then results in some form of wrongdoing, or somebody attends a protest and does something which is illegal, we should be just as culpable as all of those who called for protests about George Floyd, as in we shouldn't be.
Well, nobody's saying that, again, that protesting is illegal. It's what happens in some of these protests, and the knowledge that that may be the case, and that maybe incitement is the case here, that that may be illegal. Do you not think that Joe Marsh's comments were in somehow irresponsible at the very least?
I think you have read me a comment and you've said he called for protests, and he specifically told people, you've already said, not to go to mosques. But he said, we need lawful protests.
Outside migrant hotels. Why protest outside a migrant hotel?
You'd have to ask him that. I mean, I think it's obvious, but you can ask him that and I'm sure he'll give you an answer. But the fact of the matter is, if you call for lawful activity and then something happens and that is then thrown back at you, then that should be thrown at everyone who calls for a protest that ends in violence. But it's not being. And you must see this hypocrisy. You've either got blinkers on, or you're so politically motivated, you're refusing to acknowledge the truth of what I'm saying.
The reason I ask you this is that we've spoken to a former government advisor as well, who says your group is creating a climate conducive to terrorism, violence and hate, and poses a threat to democracy. Now, she wants a new law that would ban PA and similar groups, because although you're not banned at the minute because you're not seen to be a terrorist organisation, but...
Wait, you just said not seen to be. We are not a terrorist organisation. We are not a terrorist organisation.
That is why you're not illegal under
the law. We are not a terrorist organisation. We do not endorse violence or terrorism. No. You said not seen to be. We are not.
But
not,
if your group
when you say
creating,
not seen to be, that is a loaded comment.
If your group, in the words of this former government advisor, is creating a climate conducive to terrorism, violence and hate, and poses a threat to democracy, what's your response to that?
My response to that is clear. You have just said that a government advisor, who again you haven't named, and government advisors are people who are politically motivated and they push
these
the government.
Independent,
they're not independent. Everyone has an agenda. These people push the government in a way that they want to see society go. That is a fact. Now, the second thing is, this government advisor, whoever she may be, has said that we are a lawful organisation, has said that we do not engage in, support or endorse terrorism, which we do not. So rather than saying they're not breaking the law, leave them alone, she says we need new laws to shut down people who are speaking lawfully and who are not terrorists, because I don't like what they're saying. That is tyranny. That's the kind of thing you would expect under a communist government. That is not the kind of behaviour you would expect in a free society.
The last Conservative government, Michael Gove, began a process of assessing whether you were or not an extremist organisation, and said, as I said in my very first question to you, that you were promoting neo-Nazi ideology.
Wait, Michael Gove was not seeking to bring in new laws to
that.
Michael Gove said that a number of groups in the country would be assessed as to whether they should receive government funding and ministerial access. Now, firstly, we've never had any government funding, and secondly, we've never had any ministerial access.
It was also to assess whether you should be branded as extremist. Yes,
that,
it was.
That was, he said, we're going to bring in this new assessment about extremism, which we will say that groups that we brand arbitrarily as extremists won't be able to get government funding or ministerial access. We've never had either of those things. And again, this is a word, extremist, that is thrown around in a very interesting manner. So if a white guy goes to an anti-immigration protest and kicks a police van, he's an extremist. If a black guy sets fire to the Union Jack at the cenotaph, he's a protester that went a little bit too far and you let him off. This is two-tier justice, and this is a classic example of people being vilified for speaking about a problem, and we are speaking about mass immigration, multiculturalism, the grooming gangs, and we are being silent.
But you're not just speaking about the problem the as you see it, are you? You've got members for whom you're responsible who are clearly alleged and accused of inciting racial hatred and racial violence. Now we've got
alleged being the word. Alleged being the word.
Absolutely. But we've got clear examples of that with so many of your members, and as a
but it's not so many. You count them on one hand. About five people there, maybe six.
Also,
over 20,000 people have signed up to Patriotic Alternative, and you've said that six people in private conversation at private events have said things you don't like. I have said if they have breached our code of conduct, we will deal with that. And you are clinging to those six people for dear life because you are pushing this anti-white two-tier sentiment, which is there because you wish to silence normal people speaking out about these issues, which the government and the BBC ignore.
Given the amount of the people that are your members that have been prosecuted and convicted of racially...
Well, look, can I make a point? No, there's a point that needs to be made. The three people that you mentioned who were indeed convicted, and you're obviously going to cling to that for dear life as well. Sam Melia was convicted for producing stickers that were produced before he was ever part of PA.
Were they members of PA?
Were they convicted for anything they did?
Are they members of PA?
They are members of PA. But were they?
And you're happy to have them as members of PA?
I'm happy to have them. They did these things before they were part of Patriotic Alternative, and the things they were convicted for never had anything to do with Patriotic Alternative. You know that. Again, you're clinging to something that is highly disingenuous. If you tell normal people that these people were convicted of offences that took place before they were ever part of Patriotic Alternative, that none of the things that they were convicted for ever had anything to do with Patriotic Alternative, and the things they were convicted for were either thought or speech crimes, people would have a completely different view of what you're saying. It's a misrepresentation.
You're happy to take them under your wing now and campaign for them and raise money for them?
Of course I am. And what's more, I am happy to take people on board in Patriotic Alternative and attempt to get them on the right track, get them campaigning, and get them involved in lawful political activity that campaigns for a change in society. The issue with certain people espousing intemperate opinions or things you don't like to hear is because people have been backed into a corner, they feel they can't speak their mind, and then people say things out of frustration. Now, if people had a genuine outlet and could talk about these issues openly without people breathing down their neck or trying to ensure they lose their jobs, we wouldn't have many of the issues we have today.
So the people convicted, also Aaron, Tom, Pratik, Alex and Joe, are all people you'll be speaking to, telling them to adhere to your code of conduct and speak with less
intemperate language. Who, on viewing this footage that you're going to present that has broken our code of conduct, will be getting a letter and it will be investigated. And if you get a letter from us about breaching a code of conduct, depending on the severity of the breach, you can either have a written warning, be suspended, or expelled. I haven't seen the evidence, but that process will be followed through, exactly as I have stated to you now.
How far does your personal responsibility as a leader go? If members of your group have broken the law, are inciting racial hatred, should you yourself?
Oh, well, I'll answer that. I mean, when Hamas attacked Israel on October the 7th and the Labour Party conference erupted into cheers of support and people were openly celebrating that, which is highly illegal because those people were celebrating a terrorist attack carried out by a group banned in the UK. Nothing happened to those people, but is Keir Starmer responsible for the actions of those people? Again, you'd say no, But if it was me, you'd say yes.
I'm asking you, are you responsible for the actions of your members, those who've been convicted, and those who... So you,
of course
you take no responsibility for what Aaron, Tom,
I take responsibility in the sense that it is my responsibility to ensure they abide by a code of conduct and to ensure there's an investigation. Did I make those people say it? No. Will Keir Starmer be hauled up? Will the Labour Party leadership be hauled up for the people who have celebrated terrorism within the Labour Party? Of course not, because there's a double standard in this country. When the left go out and celebrate groups that have carried out terrorist attacks, or when people walk down the street, you know, with Hamas flags, etc., when people are arrested at pro-Palestinian events for saying things deemed racist, those people are at worst given a slap on the wrist, or at best it's just completely ignored. But when it's Patriotic Alternative, it's a secret investigation by the BBC.
Given what we've told you and the evidence that will be presented in our programme about your members and some of your supporters, what will you do now? Will you expel people from PA if you find...
But again, you've asked me this question now.
I'm asking you, will you do now?
I've just said, when we've seen the evidence, we will serve letters on people who have said these comments, and there will be some form of investigation, and those people will either be subject to a written warning, suspension or expulsion, depending on the breach of the code of conduct. That is a fair process, but we are not, on your say-so, expelling anyone without seeing the evidence or without understanding the context in which those comments were made.
Are you an extremist organisation? What will you do if the law eventually does decide that you should be banned or proscribed under perhaps new and anti-extremist laws?
We're not an extremist organisation. The fact of the matter is, if the government changes the law in order to brand us as extremists, or changes the law in order to bring in restrictive, draconian new legislation that prevents people from speaking freely and enjoying freedom of association, then we will address that as it happens. But the fact that you brought me here today and said everything you're doing is lawful, you're not terrorists, you've not broken the law, so essentially the government needs to change the law because we don't like what you think, say and do, that is tyranny.
But there is a campaign. The last government did start to look at this issue. And there are groups like yours, you're not the only group, that fall below the threshold of terrorism, but are seen to incite racial violence and incite other kinds of concerns in society, and that those groups may be fit for prescription. What would you do if your group fought
for that? Again, you've just shown yourself to be making an absolutely idiotic comment. Any political group that doesn't involve itself in terrorism falls below the threshold of terrorism. Any group that isn't a terrorist group falls below that threshold because they're not a terrorist. Why don't we ask the question fairly and say, look, Mark, you're not a terrorist group, which we're not, you know we're not. The government has discussed, or previous governments have discussed, changing the law to outlaw lawful, peaceful organisations that don't engage in terrorism. My answer to that is tyranny. And that is what the government is doing. The government is engaging in tyranny because it wants to scare people, it wants to silence people, and it wants to ensure that the groundswell of anger, which is building in this country against the grooming scandal, against mass immigration, against anti-white racist attacks, that the people who are getting angry also get scared. So they sit in their homes and they don't speak up, they don't go out, they don't organise, and they don't engage in politics. This is about silencing people who engage in the political system in a way that the government and the liberal elite don't like.
People who perhaps are accused of espousing extreme anti-racist, anti-immigrant views, you think that...
What you're saying is, you guys have the wrong opinions, so you shouldn't be allowed to operate. That's the long and short of this.
What society says and what the law says is that you shouldn't be allowed to incite racial aggravation in society, and you should be allowed to incite in the way that some of your members are accused of doing so.
No, our members aren't. our members spoke in private conversation at a private meeting. They were not walking down the street with a megaphone trying to get members of the public on board or trying to get people to do things or being part of a campaign. They were speaking in private conversation. What you are saying is essentially lawful groups need to be outlawed and people should have to watch their back in private conversation because you want new laws that will bring in a tyranny which is would be previously unheard of in this country. It'd be something akin to what you'd have in the Soviet Union.
Are you, as Michael Gove and others have suggested, akin to being a neo-Nazi white supremacist organisation?
No, we want the best for the indigenous people of these islands. We want to ensure that the indigenous people of these islands don't become a minority, as they have in London, Birmingham and Leicester, and we want to ensure that the indigenous people of these islands are never treated as second-class citizens. And at the moment, there are towns and cities in Britain where the indigenous people are treated worse than second-class citizens. In fact, they're treated as a hated minority.
We've written to all the people that we've talked about today. Some have not chosen not to respond. You're the leader of this group, and you've agreed to do this interview on that basis. You speak for your members and the organisation. Have they asked you to answer for them?
No. No one's asked me to answer for them. I haven't prepared any statements for anyone else. That is down to them. People have obviously informed me that they have received the letters, but nobody has asked me in any way to assist them with their responses.
So those people that haven't responded to us, you're not speaking on their behalf.
Well, of course not. I can't speak on anyone's. But these are three adult.
But the leader of an organisation, you may choose to speak on their behalf. No?
Look, we're not a government department or the military. I don't speak on people's behalf in that way. You've reached out to people. It is up to them how they respond. People have the freedom to choose whether they write to you or engage with you or give you an interview. I came here today because I wanted to speak to you. If people want to come and speak to you who you've reached out, that's up to them. It's not down to me. And I certainly haven't advised anybody as to whether they should or should not speak to you. That's up to them. They're free people. We're not a totalitarian organisation that makes demands of people who, you know, have attended a conference or a camp. We simply are a community-based group that advocates for the rights of the indigenous people of these islands.
Not the neo-Nazi supremacist organisation.
I've already said we're not, definitely not supremacists. We believe that people all over the world, regardless of their race, their culture, or their ethnicity, deserve a homeland, they deserve a place where they retain their position as a majority, and where they can enjoy their culture, their traditions, and their ways of life. But that extends to the English, the Scots, and the Welsh as well. We should have those rights too. You know, if you go to Japan, you should see the Japanese people as a majority. You should see them enjoying their culture and way of life. They shouldn't become a minority. Neither should we. That's a cohesive worldview where everybody has their place in the world. Everybody's different.
You know, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people, members of your
organization. You specifically asked me whether we're a supremacist group, and I have explained there that we are absolutely not a supremacist group.
But we're talking about here about members of the organisation who are, on several occasions, having the most vile and...
Keep saying the most vile. Look, there's lots of people who use words that you don't like, I'm sure, out there in the public. And some people will probably hear words that you've recorded and be horrified. And other people will hear words that you've recorded and say, well, I hear that on the building site or in the pub every day. Now, the fact is, what we're talking about here is words and opinions. And the fact there's such a hullabaloo about people having opinions that the BBC and the Labour Party doesn't like tells us just how this country is going and just the fact that free speech is under threat.
Free speech is one thing, but let me pick you up on this finally. But words and opinions matter, because words and opinions that are extreme, that are violent, can lead to wider violence in society and can incite racial hatred. Do you not see that some of these words could lead to that?
I think we've already covered this. When people on the left,
this isn't about people on the left, sorry. No,
of course it is. It's about...
This is about members of your organisation.
This is about having a system that is fair, where, under which people are treated equally. Now, if people advocate for protest, that is their legal right. But you are saying, if people who you categorise as far right advocate for protest and something happens to that protest, then those people are heinous people who have stirred things up and should be completely culpable for that disorder. However, when people on the left or people within the media advocate for protest for something like George Floyd or Black Lives Matter, and it ends in days of rioting, violence, police officers being attacked, attacks on war memorials, nobody's culpable, and it was all just unfortunate and things got out of hand. That is what normal people are starting to see. That is the two-tier system people are sick of. Two-tier Keir was trending on Twitter because of the things that I'm talking about here.
Not because of the language that some of your members have used. That is...
No, people are appalled that when... Look, as I've said, people who committed serious criminal acts at protests should be arrested, regardless of what side of the political divide they're on. However, what people are angry about is when a young lad kicks a police van and gets 18 months or 2 years, and then another young lad sets fire to the Union Jack at the Cenotaph and gets a suspended sentence, a slap on the wrist, and walks out. People look at that and say, this isn't justice. And what you're doing here isn't justice either. It's a witch hunt, and it's an attempt to silence a lawful political organisation which has never endorsed violence, terrorism, or any of the things which you're trying tangentially to link us with.
Mark Collett, thanks for watching.
Thank you for making it this far. And if you like what you heard, feel free to either share this recording or, better still, download it and re-upload it to sites like Facebook, X, and YouTube. If you want the full unedited audio of the interview, a copy of that is available from the link below or on my Telegram channel.